It was 35 years ago when the freighter Summit Venture rammed into the Sunshine Skyway Bridge, sending 35 people to their deaths. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
It was one of those regional catastrophes that still feels fresh to locals even decades later. Saturday, May 9th marks 35 years since a ship hit the Sunshine Skyway Bridge, sending several cars and a Greyhound bus hurtling off the bridge, killing 35 people. Florida Matters' Robin Sussingham takes a look back.
Bruce Atkins was 32 years old, an experienced mariner, and an apprentice harbor pilot in Tampa Bay. It was his last training mission, and he was shadowing Captain John Laro as Laro steered the 606-foot Summit Venture through the twists and turns of the shipping channel in the shallow bay. It was a rainy, misty morning, but nothing unusual for Florida weather. No one, however, predicted the sudden freak storm with gale-force winds that seemed to come out of nowhere.
It became blinding, driving, rain, wind.
The whiteout conditions couldn't have come at a worse point. Laro was closing in on a 13-degree turn to port, which would take him under the Sunshine Skyway Bridge. Atkins was watching the radar, which now showed nothing. They were enveloped in a wall of rain. Visibility was gone. And perhaps most importantly, they'd lost radio contact with an oil tanker which had been coming towards the bridge in the opposite direction. Dropping anchor at that point would have put them directly, or so they thought, in the tanker's path.
The only prudent decision was, we knew where the buoy was, we thought we were in the channel, is to make the turn as you normally would on normal days and continue on the course under the bridge.
What they didn't know was that the tanker had pulled over, and tragically, the tropical storm force winds had shifted direction. Bill DeYoung is a St. Petersburg native who's written a book on the incident.
The wind changes direction. This is a very light ship. Those gusts, which probably exceeded 70 miles an hour, start blowing him sideways. His radar's gone. He can't. This is all happening so quick. As he's making the turn, ray of sun starts to come through the clouds, and he sees the Sunshine Skyway Bridge, and he realizes at that moment, I'm not where I'm supposed to be.
Laro ordered the anchors dropped and the engines full astern, but it wasn't enough to stop the ship.
The ship grazed, just barely touched the second pier, just barely touched it, and the whole bridge crumbled. 1,300 feet of bridge came down, just like that. Laro is 500 feet away up in the wheelhouse of Summit Venture, absolutely helpless.
Atkins was alongside Laro in the wheelhouse watching it unfold.
A Greyhound bus plummeted 150 feet through steel and girders, and even, you know, you can hear that. It's, you know, that's very rich, and cars are driving off. You're seeing this, and you're horrified by this, but you still need to respond to things.
Laro put out the distress call. You can hear him frantically trying to get the bridge closed to traffic.
The Skyway Bridge is down. Get all emergency equipment out to the Skyway Bridge. The Skyway Bridge is down. There's a mayday. Emergency situation. Stop the traffic on that Skyway Bridge.
Meanwhile, Bill Covert received a page that a boat had hit the Skyway Bridge and rushed to the docks at nearby Eckerd College, where Covert led the search and rescue team. He and three Eckerd students boarded a motorboat and started heading to the bridge, thinking maybe a fishing boat had taken on water. They rounded a spit of land, and the wreckage came into sight.
The shock was just incredible. We couldn't believe what we were seeing. It wasn't a boat, it was a ship that hit the bridge, and that the bridge was down. There was a small boat came up, and the people on board were yelling and pointing. And we looked to where they were pointing, and we saw the wheels of the Greyhound bus bobbing on the surface, and the buoyancy of those wheels was keeping the Greyhound bus afloat.
26 people died in that bus. Covert's team was able to pull out 7 bodies through the smashed windshield and heave them onto their small vessel. They ran out of body bags and ran out of space. They had to tie 2 of the bodies onto the diving platform. The Summit Ventures crew had picked up the one survivor, the driver of a pickup truck that bounced off the deck of the ship before going in the water. On board the Summit Venture, all was quiet. Atkins had time to absorb what had happened, and he'd gone out onto the wing of the bridge and gotten sick.
After this accident happened, you stand there and you look at this and say, this is not explainable. This is not going to go away. This will be with you for a long, long time. For me, this was absolutely a life-changing moment.
Lots of things changed after the disaster. Bill DeYoung stands on the remnant of that bridge, now a popular fishing pier. The rebuilt bridge is just to the west, and DeYoung points out the changes that have been made.
One of the things they did, aside from raise the height, is they widened the channel underneath. And very specifically, these bumpers that they have out there, these concrete islands, this is all in the wake of some adventure. Those things are there to keep ships from hitting this bridge.
Lara was cleared of any wrongdoing, though Atkins says he suffered tremendous guilt until his death in 2002. Atkins had no role in the crash, but it caused him to give up his lifelong dream of becoming a harbor pilot. He left Tampa Bay and went back home to Massachusetts, where he says he's had a good life. But even now, he says, he's haunted whenever the weather takes a turn for the worse. I'm Robin Sussingham for Florida Matters.
I'm Kirsten Cooper on location at the Mahaffey Theater in St. Petersburg. Bill DeYoung has written a fascinating book called Skyway, The True Story of Tampa Bay's Signature Bridge and the Man Who Brought It Down. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thanks, Carson.
So the man you're talking about, of course, is the harbor pilot John Laro.
John Laro, yeah.
I want to talk more about Laro in a moment, but let's go back to that moment in time. If you're of a certain age, you probably remember that scary feeling of crossing the old Skyway and the sound when your tires hit that metal grating at the very top and that eerie hum. For a lot of folks back then, it was a scary bridge to cross.
I started, I guess, my first trip across the Skyway when I was 4 or 5 years old, when it was a single span, and I never forgot that from the first time. How frightening that was. You felt like you were in the clouds, and it was almost like this chanting of monks calling you somewhere. Yeah, I don't think I thought that when I was five. I did later. Yeah, very scary.
It's sort of similar to today. Of course, drawbridges have that same metal grating, mm-hmm. and you can hear that sound.
You're not so high up off the water.
And you're going a little faster, too, mm-hmm. I would imagine. And it was just a few months before the Skyway disaster when another disaster happened. Nearly the same place, the collision that sent the Coast Guard cutter Blackthorn to the bottom, killing 23 crew members. So that was fresh on the minds of people crossing that bridge.
It was just 4 months earlier. The pilots refer to that part of the bridge and the cut channel that goes under there as the combat zone, where the sight lines are reduced, and you had to be sort of extra vigilant to see what was coming, because the ships that were incoming or outgoing had to make a very sharp turn to stay in the channel.
Now, on May 8th, 1980, the day before the disaster, just a normal day back then, Jimmy Carter, president, Bob Graham was the governor. The headlines of the St. Petersburg Times back then dealt with gas prices possibly hitting $1.25 a gallon and the Mariel boat lift underway, the Iranian hostage crisis. So sort of normal for 1980. Take us through those last moments on the morning of May 9th, 1980, as a storm gathered strength over Tampa Bay and the sequence of events.
The National Weather Service didn't issue any kind of severe weather warning that day, which is how the pilots planned their transits. Just said, scattered thunderstorms, be careful, seas are a little bit high, it's going to vary. So Captain Laro and Captain Atkins, who was his co-pilot that morning, boarded Summit Venture about 6:20 in the morning, about 6 miles off Egmont Key, and began the transit into Tampa Bay. Now, the thing to remember is that Summit Venture was riding light. They were coming in to pick up phosphate, so it was very light. Draft in the front was 9 feet, which is pretty high, and it was, I think, 12 feet in the back. What ships have to do is stay inside the channel, because Tampa Bay is very, very shallow. And the channel is 35, 40 feet deep. It's dredged. If you go outside the channel, you may ground. You probably will ground. Even a light ship like that at 20,000 tons mm-hmm. is going to get stuck in the mud. That's why you have pilots. The pilots know this area. The captain of Summit Venture happened to be Chinese. He'd been in there a little bit before, a few times before, but at the same time, it had to have a pilot. The pilot is very familiar with the channels in Tampa Bay that will get you into the port. They board. The weather is fairly normal. There's a little drizzly, not too bad. They pass Egmont Key. About 7:15, they pass Buoy 16, which is a mile or so outside of the Sunshine Skyway Bridge. And just after that, the sky just explodes. Nobody saw this thing coming. It was a localized squall. Winds picked up almost instantaneously, 50, 60, even 70 miles an hour, blowing horizontally. The radar failed. Now, the thing about these big ships is it takes almost a mile for them to stop under good conditions. Now, here's Lero. He knows the bridge is coming. He knows he has to make this turn. He has a matter of moments before he gets to the Sunshine Skyway Bridge, which he still hasn't seen. He knows this, and he can't see it at all. He's posted lookouts to the bow saying, "You report to me as soon as you see this turn buoy, and that way I know that I will be in the right place and we can go under the bridge." He can't make a hard turn to port because there is a gasoline tanker coming out of the port of Tampa heading west. If he makes this hard turn to port, he may collide with the tanker. Big explosion, two dead ships, a blown up bridge, not a good thing. He can't make a hard turn to starboard because the wind is coming from the southwest. If he doesn't ground in the mud, it is definitely going to blow him sideways into the bridge, broadside.
And he can't drop anchor?
He can't drop anchor because the ship won't stop in time. There's no way it's going to stop. He was less than a mile from the bridge at this point when this happened. He's weighing all these options when two things happen. The radar clears for two sweeps, and Captain Atkins says, "I see the buoys. We're in the right place. Make the turn now. You're here where you need to be." And right then, the lookout on the bow reports in, "I see the buoy. This is it." So he decides in that instant, "I'll make the turn. I'm here. I can go under the bridge." They called it shoot for the hole. You shoot for the hole. You shoot for the 800-foot gap under the Skyway Bridge. He makes the turn. Now, what happens in that vicious weather cell is the wind is changing. The wind changes direction, again, almost instantaneously. As he starts to make this port turn, the wind shifts from the north-northeast and starts blowing him out of the channel to the south. He doesn't realize this. This is all in a space of maybe a minute that all of this happens. As they're making the turn, the rain stops, just like that. You're very familiar with Florida weather, I'm sure. Right. How it starts and it stops and it changes and it's gone, just like that. He's making the turn. The sun's coming out. He can see the bridge. And in that instant, this is 7:33 a.m., he realizes he's not in the right place. He orders the anchors dropped. He hits the engine telegraph full astern. "Let's do what we can. Let's stop this thing." He's making the turn. He just clips the second support pier, 2S it's called. And they stood there helpless in the wheelhouse of the ship watching this bridge just cascade down. Nothing they could do.
I want to play a portion of the radio call that went out from the Summit Venture to the Coast Guard. This was seconds after the collision.
"Mayday, mayday, mayday, Coast Guard. Mayday, 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 Coast Guard.
Vessel calling, mayday, vessel in distress. This is United States Coast Guard, St. Petersburg, Florida. Request your position, nature of distress, and number of persons on board. Over."
"This is Coast Guard St. Petersburg. Roger, what size is the vessel that hit the bridge? Over." "It's a large vessel. Stop the traffic on the Skyway Bridge. There's some people in the water. Get emergency."
The radio call as a Summit Venture rammed into the Sunshine Skyway Bridge on May 9th, 1980. Full length of that audio, by the way, on our website. And that was Harbor Pilot John Lero making that frantic call.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
That was seconds after the collision. It had to be a moment of sheer terror.
Well, the collision was recorded at 7:34 a.m. And Lero's first thing is to say, I'm watching cars fall off. I'm watching this happen. Now, granted, he's 500 feet away in the wheelhouse. He's 50 feet off the deck of the ship, 500 feet away, and watching this absolutely silently in what he described as slow motion. They're just making arcs, and they're flipping over and going off the end. He's calling desperately for them to stop traffic so the cars won't keep coming. And the Coast Guard, if you listen to the call, is saying, how many people you got on board? How heavy are you? What's your destination? What is your cargo? And he's saying, can't we do that later? Just stop the damn traffic. Very frustrating.
When first responders got there, they couldn't believe what they saw. St. Petersburg firefighter Gerald Chalmers told the Times that when he was told that the bridge had fallen, he thought it was a joke.
I don't think anybody thought this could happen. When you lived in St. Petersburg, when you lived in the Bay Area, the Skyway, though it was massive and a little scary, was something you dealt with all the time. It was part of life here. And it's occurred to me many times that from what I've found out through my research and what I've learned, that it was a miracle this hadn't happened before. That bridge had been up one side of it, as you know, since 1954, and it was never protected from ship traffic, ever.
My guest is Bill DeYoung, the author of Skyway, the true story of Tampa Bay's signature bridge and the man who brought it down. You can find a link to the book and to many other photographs, audio, and resources at the WUSF News website. Click on the Florida Matters link. We asked for your feedback, your memories, or connection to the Skyway Bridge disaster.
My name's Lori Adams. I was with the Red Cross on that day in May when the Skyway went down and was on the relief effort. We had just several months prior to that been at the same location at the Fort Soto Pier taking care of the Blackthorn Capricorn disaster. So the ironic thing was a lot of the systems and infrastructure, where to plug in, you know, pay phones back then, and all that, we kind of knew where to go, which was kind of ironic.
This is Bob Soper. I'm calling from Sarasota, Florida, and I have a comment about the Skyway disaster. I was working in Belk Lindsey in Bradenton at that time, and the manager of our hearing aid department lived in St. Petersburg. No one had cell phones back then. He paused at the rest stop, thought that the top of the Skyway was covered in clouds, and then realized it was down. Had to get to his work in Bradenton, so he drove all the way around through Tampa and then down to Bradenton. Unfortunately, he never stopped along the way to call his wife, who was very concerned. So that's the difference from now to then. Cell phones, communications, and it was quite a disaster.
Coming up.
It made me think that all of us who crossed both of those spans for so many years, we're literally taking our lives in our own hands.
I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. I'm Kirsten Cooper on location at the Mahaffey Theater in St. Petersburg. My guest is Bill DeYoung, the author of Skyway, the true story of Tampa Bay's signature bridge and the man who brought it down. This month marks the 35th anniversary of the Skyway Bridge disaster. The current bridge, the one that opened in 1987, was constructed with pier bumpers. They're called what, dolphins?
Dolphins.
And there was no such protection on the original
nothing,
bridge.
Nothing. If you look at the original photographs of both spans, they put up planks, wooden planks that were, you know, nailed onto pilings, like you'd have in your little outboard boat going under a little bridge. And by the time of some adventure, that had all rotted away and was long gone. There's nothing.
Was the idea of bumpers for a bridge unheard of or unusual back in 1954 or subsequently in 1967 when the construction of the second bridge began?
It must have been some sort of idealism, thinking that everything's going to work perfectly and it can't happen here. I never read anything specifically from the 50s saying, you know, why didn't you think of this? This is 24 hours a day, these monsters going through here. It made me think that all of us who crossed both of those spans for so many years were literally taking our lives in our own hands. Wes McIntyre, who was the survivor of the Skyway Bridge disaster, used to slow down. He'd time it to where he'd be crossing the gratings when the ships were going under so he could watch them. He'd been a Navy man, and he loved ships. and you could see right through the grates all the way 150 feet down there.
I want to talk a bit about the people involved. We've mentioned the harbor pilot, John Lero. He was haunted for the rest of his life by the accident. He died in 2002. Did you ever speak to him?
No, I did not. He developed, as you know, multiple sclerosis in the 80s, which some doctors say is triggered by extreme stress, and had to quit piloting. And the rest of his life is very sad. By the time of his death in 2002, he couldn't walk, could barely speak. He was, you know, in very bad shape, but still completely obsessed with this. John was a lifelong Catholic, and it's always been my theory, especially after speaking to many of his closest friends, that he thought God was paying him back for what he'd done. It was an extreme case of guilt. But no, I never did speak to him. I started this project long after he was gone.
He was vilified after the accident. He lost his job. His wife, it was just, you know, incredible. And the treatment he got, do you think he deserved that treatment? I mean,
oh, absolutely not.
He was, you know, again, cleared, basically, of any wrongdoing, but that
sure,
wasn't enough.
It goes back to this, Carson, I think. How can anybody be stupid enough to hit a stationary object with a 20,000-ton hunk of metal, you know? And I say that sort of rhetorically because, well, we all know how it happened, but people don't remember, first of all, that he was exonerated. People never really read what had actually happened. So there are a lot of the sort of old folk tales and, you know, misunderstandings. The stigma is still there. Mm-hmm. That even though John is gone, there are a lot of folks who still say, well, that guy must have been an idiot.
One of the poignant moments you describe in your book is Wesley McIntyre, the lone survivor. He was commuting to Manatee County, and mm-hmm. he was driving a pickup truck.
Yep.
And it so every year on the anniversary of the accidents, he would drive to the Skyway approach, get out of his car, and wait for that 7:30 Greyhound bus to Miami and wave to it. It's the bus he says he could not save.
He was haunted by survivor guilt, which is a very real form of PTSD, that he couldn't save anybody. And it just became a ritual of his to go down there. He would wave and he'd give them the thumbs up as a bus would zoom by. And his wife, Betty, who has since passed away, had a photograph of it from, I think, the first time he did it. And we were able to use that in the book. Very sad and very touching. It ruined his life, just like it ruined John Lero's. And Wes passed away in 1989 from cancer, but he never got over what happened to him.
The famous photograph, I'm sure many of us have seen, it's on the cover of your book, shows a yellow Buick stopped, what, about 14 inches?
14 inches.
From the edge of the bridge. The driver, Richard Hornbuckle, and three passengers got out. What was his take on the disaster?
Well, it's interesting that he was a used car dealer, right? And so he had three of his old cronies. They were driving down to South Florida to pick up three cars to bring up to his lot. They did this every couple of weeks. It was interesting that he had slowed down because someone had seen it happening and had stopped in the right lane and was trying to flag him down. And Dick Hornbuckle was behind him and went around to keep going over the bridge just in the nick of time, realized what had happened. He watched the Greyhound bus go by him. That's how quickly all this happened. Skidded to a halt, as you say, 14 inches. They all get out. The grating's wet. The rain has all but stopped, but they're crawling. The wind is howling. The three guys get up to the top of the concrete. Where's Dick? They turn around. He's back at the car. They've all left their doors open. He's slamming the doors because he knows this is his personal car, and he loves this car. He doesn't want it to blow over the edge. And they're watching him with their mouths open. He gets his keys, and he goes around to the trunk and starts opening the trunk to get his golf clubs out because Dick had a golf game the next day. His friends are screaming at him over the wind. Are you nuts? Get out of there. It's going to fall. And he finally says, yeah, you know, they're right. I think he slammed the trunk. He did. He slammed the trunk closed, left his golf clubs, and went back. And what he said the next day was, well, I knew some insurance company would take care of my car, but golf clubs, that's like an old pair of shoes. You really get used to the way they feel.
The car was sitting there after the bridge collapsed. Did the car, was he able to recover it, or did
they did recover it? They got Harold's Truck Stop from up on US 19. They came out with a pickup truck, and they wouldn't let the guy from the truck stop go out there with the chain and hook. The firemen did it themselves, very, very carefully. There's photographs of this, inched their way out there and pulled it back.
It's kind of hard to tell from the photograph, but where the Buick stopped, was the bridge still on an incline, or was it over the hump? And
it was on the grading.
It stopped on the grading.
The grading was held together like teeth, right? So basically it had ripped right there. It was about a 35-degree incline down at the bottom, this grading, which had it gone, had it tipped, or the pivots in there had moved a little bit, it would have gone over the side.
So it was sort of pointing slightly down.
Slightly downward,
and
yeah.
So these guys are climbing with their fingers through these grates up.
It's very dramatic.
Back. That's just an incredible story. You've been captivated by the Skyway Bridge disaster since that very day. What is it about this particular disaster for you?
I don't know that I've been captivated from the very day, but it certainly stayed with me all those
years. It reads that way in this book, though.
I think that's because I'm from St. Pete, and I was here the day that it happened. And there's always been certainly not pride, my God, but a feeling of like this was our story.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading about it, some anniversary thing a few years ago when we were living in Savannah, Georgia, as a matter of fact. And I had more questions then this story answered. And then I'd read another anniversary story, and it would describe things slightly differently. And so I went looking for an interview with Mr. McIntyre. I found every interview that Captain Laro ever did. They didn't really answer that much. So I wanted to know more. And I was a journalist. So what you do when you're a journalist is you start asking lots of questions. And before I knew it, I realized I was just amassing a lot of information. And then I thought, okay, this feels like something I need to do.
This month marks the 35th anniversary of the Sunshine Skyway disaster. Bill DeYoung is the author of Skyway, the True Story of Tampa Bay's Signature Bridge and the Man Who Brought It Down. It is an incredible book. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us on Florida Matters.
Pleasure to be here, Carson. Thanks for having me.
You can find a link to the book and to many other photographs, audio, and resources at WUSFnews.org. Click on the Florida Matters link. And we would love to hear from you on Facebook or via email, floridamatters@wusf.org. Thanks to the Mahaffey Theater for hosting our show on the road today. Our producer is Lottie Watts, and our remote engineer is Craig George. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.